Gaura Purnima, 2014, New Vrindavan.
The Panchatantra, assisted by its six Goswamis, inundated Bharatvarsha with the holy name of Krishna and the mellows of Vrindavan. Within 250 years, a group of sensually minded and motivated imposters under the nurturing influence of Kali had so much compromised the understanding and faith in the dignity and sanctity of Mahaprabhu's movement, that the true teachings of Lord Ramananda were largely forgotten. Darkness cannot triumph over light, except for relative periods of time. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur was the first prominent empowered acharya in modern times, who sought vigorously for a means to restore Mahaprabhu's movement to its proper dignity and sanctity. And he considered that to establish the birthplace of Mahaprabhu would be very instrumental, because that had also been lost in a very short period of time. He prayed for a ray of Vishnu to assist him, and that was answered with the appearance of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. And Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur also wrote in his books that soon that personality would descend, who would spread the movement according to the prediction of Mahaprabhu to every town and village of the world. Now at that time, even amongst the sincere followers of Mahaprabhu, very few believed that Bhaktivinoda Yatsi had another underground could be taken literally. Even very inspired Vaishnav luminaries thought that that verse was maybe metaphorical or maybe exaggerated. And the common belief was that Mahaprabhu's prediction that the holy name would travel to every town and village in the world meant India. Very few believed the knowledge of Vrindavan could be distributed in the lands of Balachas and Yavanas, degraded by habit and culture, bereft of purificatory rites. How could such people take to the culture, the most refined spiritual culture of Bhakti? Bhaktivedanta Thakur studying ancient maps, government records, and authorized scriptures ascertained that Mayapur is actually on the eastern side of the Ganges, not in the town on the western side, which had been recognized as Mahaprabhu's Bhagavad for some time for commercial purposes. And he investigated scrutinizingly, also inquiring amongst local Vaishnavas. And he heard about a very mysterious tract of land which was in the possession of the Muslims, but they had abandoned that land because of the strange sounds and sights and lights that prevailed in that region. And as farmers had tried to cultivate the land, nothing but tulsi would grow there. Seeing it useless for agricultural purposes, he used it. They tried to use it in a very degraded way as a place to attempt to answer the calls of nature. But every time they dug a hole, flames would emerge from the earth and burn them. And they just finally vacated the area. When Srila Bhaktivedanta Thakur is hearing this history of that region, he became very intrigued. And he found that there was several mounds of earth where in the past residences had been. And he felt intuitively, instinctively, that this was the Yoga Group. But for spiritual confirmation, he brought Jagannath Das Babaji, who at the time was 50 years old or so, invalid, could only be carried in a basket, and he was so emaciated, he was carried on the head of his servant, so old that he would have to hold his eyes open even to see with his fingers. And when his servant carried the Babaji to this jumped out of the basket, dancing ecstatically high into the air, chanting, "He told me, my Janmabhoomi, this is indeed the place of my heavenly mind." Srila Bhaktivedanta Thakur, to develop that place, although a highly respected high court magistrate, was so influential that the British did everything they could to discourage him from retiring. When he finally did, he took to begging to collect funds for the Gaura Vishnu Priya temple. And when they began excavation, they found transport for the further. I hope Sujan Vishnu will be my deity of Jagannath Mishra. Before the appearance of Mahaprabhu, Srivas Thakur and his brothers and servants and associates were performing Sankirtan in Agaritam amidst severe persecution, and nearby in Shantipur, Advaitacharya, who is Mahavishnu, bowed in a protective spirit toward the Vaishnavas, because these Vaishnavas were persecuted both by the Hindus, who were saying that the Lord sleeps during the Chaturmasya, and these loud kirtans will awaken him from his mystic slumber, and he will retaliate by destroying the universe. And even if he's lenient, this is a Muslim district. The Muslim leader will send his boatloads of ferocious Pathan soldiers to destroy Srivas and his family and anyone participating in this kingdom. So Advaitacharya, in the mood of Mahavishnu, declared that either I will sever the heads of all these atheists, and he meant it, or I will bring down Krishna from Goloka Vrindavan to soften their hearts with Braj Bhakti. And for years, on the bank of the Ganges, he was calling in such loud, roaring voice, which echoed throughout the universe, resounding in Vaikuntha, reaching the ears of Krishna and Goloka Vrindavan, imploring the Lord to descend to save his devotees, in loud roars, imploring the Lord to descend, trailing off into soft cries like a child, crying for his mother. Sweet verse came into the mind of Advaitacharya from the Gaudiya Tantra that Sri Krishna, very kind to his devotees, sells himself to that servant who worships him with Ganges water and tasa mantras. He fulfills that devotee's desire, making the vow that I will bring him down. Advaitacharya worshipped Shalagram Shiva for years on end in the association of Haridas Thakur, imploring the Lord to come. Meanwhile, Satchimata and Jagannath Bhisha, who were locked into Shoda and Krishna Lila, had a deep yearning for Shoda, not the way people do in this world. Their hearts were the dawn, and they longed that that separation would be mitigated by the appearance of Krishna. And they worshipped the Lord with the intent of having him as their child. They had a daughter who passed away shortly after birth, as did the next seven daughters born to them. And they were finally blessed with a son, Vishwaroop, who is an expansion of Sri Bhagavad, adorned with all good qualities, gentle, kind, respectful, and devotional. And many years thereafter, Sati became not pregnant like people do in this world, rays of the setting sun which had transferred to the rising full moon, and she became effulgent. The whole house became effulgent. After 13 months of pregnancy, parents were apprehensive. They approached her father, revered astrologer and pundit, Nilamar Chakravarti, Miss Garimoni and Krishnadeva. He did his calculations and proclaimed, "This child is divine. He's waiting for the perfect opportunity to appear." That opportunity came tonight, just as the moon was rising. And as the moon was rising, full moon, Rahu was thinking, "What is the use for this moon blemished with pot marks on the evening of the appearance of the golden avatar?" So he began to swallow the moon, which caused an eclipse, which is materially very inauspicious. To counteract the effects, all the devotees and Hindus went to the Ganga and began loud kirtan. And when that kirtan resounded, even the Muslims were caught up in the joy of the occasion and joined their voices with the Vaishnavas, all chanting, "Hari, Hari." And when the whole universe and the whole creation resounded with the holy names of Krishna, he who was called by his holy name made his appearance. Philosophically speaking, Lord Gauranga is not different from Krishna, which would mean that Gauranga is equal to Sri Krishna Dhammastami. And yet from a perspective of mercy and the achievement of the highest aspiration of the jivas, we would have to say that Gaurapurnima is superior. And is therefore worshipped for his supreme potency in the ability to kindle ecstatic love for Krishna. It is surely a much greater achievement to actually attain pure love of God than simply to understand or even perceive what it is. 5,000 years ago, when Sri Krishna inundated this world with the ocean of praying and the appearance of his Brijavasi associates, and then he appeared within that ocean after undulating the world with waves of his dulcet pastimes, and then 125 years later disappearing from this world as Dwarka swept down into the sea, Krishna began to reflect. And his inner thoughts are recorded in Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami in the early chapters of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. We have scriptures like Bhagavad Gita which record the Lord's words, and Srimad Bhagavatam which record his pastimes, but no scripture is like Chaitanya Charitamrita, which describes the Lord's own inner thoughts. For so long, Krishna was thinking. So long means the day of Brahma, 8.64 billion years. For so long, I have not bestowed the praying upon this world. And Krishna was lamenting because in the absence of Braj Prem, people naturally worship the Lord in awe and veneration. That's natural. But Krishna was thinking that love made feeble by awe and veneration cannot control me or attract me or deeply, totally, fully satisfy the hearts of the living entities. And our acharyas have given purports to fully, more fully understand Krishna's words and feelings. Krishna was comparing Vaikuntha praying with Braja praying. And the comparison he used was that when my cowherd friend climbs on my shoulders and tells me, "What kind of big man are you? You and I are equal." Or when my beloved consort reproaches me in a sulky mood, those kinds of words and feelings steal my mind away from the reverent hymns of the Vedas. Love made feeble, love which is crippled by reverence, by the distance of reverence, which acknowledges that he is the Lord and I am the servant. And the servant cannot go beyond Sakya and Dasya Ras. But Krishna was thinking, I want to make the world dance in the four flavors of Braj Prem. But who can bestow Braj Prem upon living entities? Krishna revealed Braj Prem in his Leela. But other than the eternal associates who came with him and participated in his pastimes, and a few exceptional souls, like the sages of Dandakaranya, who were blessed by Ram to become gopis, as did the personified Shrutis, no one attained Braj Prem. Some witnessed it, some heard about it, but it is a much higher achievement to actually attain it. So Krishna was thinking, no one but the son of Nanda can reveal Braj Prem, but how to distribute it? Thought, I will come again as a devotee. Because unless one practices devotional service, he cannot preach it and bestow it to others. He continued reflecting. The love of Srimati Radharani is beyond my comprehension. I am the Supreme Lord, omniscient, omnipotent. I know everything. I'm all powerful. And yet I cannot know her love, which controls me. This is a paradox. He longed to understand that. He longed to experience the ecstasy the devotees feel, which he cannot himself experience. So he descended tonight at Limas as a devotee. At the Lord's name giving ceremony, Nilambar Chakravarti prevailed, presided. And looking at the horoscope and lost in wonder, he proclaimed it, this child has come to nourish the creation. which is a name specifically related to Lord Varaha in Hayagriva. Varaha, who by his tusks lifted the earth when she plunged into the darkness, and placed her back in position. And Hayagriva, who speaks Vedic wisdom when it is on the verge of being suppressed by materialistic knowledge. Jagannath Mishra wanted to call him Gauranga because all his limbs were radiant like molten gold. The ladies wanted to name him Gaurahari because he was as charming and beautiful as the Lord, only having golden complexion. And Mother Sanchi, thinking of all the daughters that she had lost, how traumatic that is to a mother, named him Nimai, in hopes that that name, like the antiseptic and protective virtues of the tree, would ward off the Lord of death, which is also appropriate to the Lord because fear personified is afraid of him. And he alone can grant fearlessness. That the holy name of the Lord and the Lord himself would appear in this world to distribute the most confidential hymn of Goloka is beyond apprehension of material senses. Chaitanya Charitamrita explains, the Lord is Dham. His holy name are self-manifest. They cannot be produced or apprehended or understood by material senses, mind, or intellect. And yet, that holy name appeared on the tongues of even foul-mouthed and omnivorous persons. And the Lord revealed his pastimes. And that is his most exceptional mercy, which has no limit. And yet the fact remains that when we chant or hear the holy name, we may not be overcome with gratitude and wonder. And that constitutes the greatest misfortune articulated by Mahaprabhu in his later years in the Gambhira, in the 8 written verses, which is all he left this world. And in his lamentation of the great misfortune of seeing and hearing this greatest manifestation of mercy all around us, meaning the holy name, not different from the Lord, but our misfortune being that we take it for granted. We think that our own ability produces the sound of the holy name and our own ears are hearing it. That is the greatest misfortune articulated in this verse, Tadrishitava Kripa Bhagavan Namapi Dudaiva Madhushamahaji Nanaraga, for which she gives the solution. Chihada Pisudishana, Tadona Pisudishana, Amanida Amanida, Kirtaniya Sadari. It is a matter of great amazement that the most exquisite wonders of the world, which, if regularly perceived by our senses and registered by the mind, don't really penetrate into the realm of our consciousness. And therefore, You see, people with their computers, I don't know what they're doing, but they're mesmerized by the lights playing across the screen of the computer. And yet, every single morning without fail, according to perfect regularity, this luminary called the sun rises in the east and distributes warmth and illumination throughout the universe. And most people don't even see it because they're absorbed in their computer screen. But to speak of registering or appreciating, they appreciate their computers, and if you try to separate them, they go into deep feelings of Vipralamba. But the sun, we take for granted. Or some people are connoisseurs of fine art, like that of Leonardo da Vinci, and they go to these fine museums and see the works of the masters and become very appreciative. But the fact that all around us, everyone we see, is a product of a spark of a tiny spark of consciousness which entered into some woman's womb and developed and took birth and became animated and developed qualities and virtues and form and features and learned to live and love, and then someday disappeared to go who knows where and repeat the whole experience all over again. Now, the finest work of Leonardo da Vinci, whoever those masters are, he cannot live, he cannot love, he cannot interact with you. But all around these devotees with whom we become irritated at times, we take for granted. Because it is a gift that is so readily and easily and made available to us. Or, there are people, there used to be anyway, who are intrigued with outer space. And they're so appreciative of spacecraft flying through the final frontier. But who registers that this Mother Earth, who with her many mountains and seas and rivers and streams, is the home for countless living entities and the only planet in creation upon which Lord Gauranga's mercy is available, and is hurtling through space at some phenomenal speed in perfect orbit with no astronaut, no mission control, no Houston. We don't even register this wonder because it is readily and easily available, and therefore we take it for granted. The real misfortune is that the holy name of the Lord and the past tense of Lord Gauranga, which transpire only here on Earth, only once in the day of Brahma, 8.64 billion years, has appeared, as Srila Prabhupada said, in the memory of all of us. And that holy name, by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, is spread to every town and village and is readily and easily available, is the very cause of our greatest misfortune if we take it for granted and fail to achieve appreciation, faith, and love for that whole thing. And therefore, Mahaprabhu is, we feel wonderful pastimes. As a child, 4 months old, Mother Satsang is out of the house for a short time. Nimai felt neglected. He jumped out of his crib, and I don't think 4 month old children can really actually do this? We demolished the whole house. And she came back, and she saw that everything was in ruins. But he was just sitting there very peacefully smiling. With the best of her empiric resources, she concluded that a demon must have attacked him. But because this child is under the direct protection of Lord Narayan, the demon could not harm him, and in retaliation he destroyed the whole house. And she described this in great detail to her friends, and Nimai was just watching and smiling. She really believes that. And then when he was just a little older, playing in the yard, playing in the house, somehow this huge serpent entered the house. And everyone, the family, was traumatized because Nimai ran and embraced the serpent, upon which the serpent formed his coils into a bed, which was softer than silk or cream. And Nimai lay down and went to this huge serpent and took rest so peacefully. And what could the people do? They cried out, "Garuda, Garuda!" And there was such a commotion that the serpent, very disappointed, started to slither away. They rescued Nimai. But for the rest of the day and the days thereafter, he kept trying to run off after that serpent because he recognized his old friend and servant, Anantashesh, his brother. And then, you know, as a child, or an infant, you might say, he just enchanted the hearts. And all of the pastimes were centered and focused on the holy name. Because this baby cried a lot. And they would offer him everything to pacify him, but nothing worked. And you know, when people were frustrated, just at their wits' end, what can possibly work? They tend to chant, "Hare Krishna." Should be the other way around, but this is the natural order of things. And when they would chant, they would not only stop crying, but they would smile, which is like a moon of nectar, would just delight the whole creation. And they soon realized that whenever he cries, and he did it a lot, he was always surrounded by these ladies chanting Hare Krishna. And when he was just big enough to stand, he would dance to the sound of his holy name. And his dance was so captivating and enchanting that he always had a circle of devotees chanting for his pleasure. And when he was a little bit bigger, he would run out into the streets in the midst of the kirtan, and in no time at all, because he was so enchanting, he could beg anything from anyone, and he would run back into the kirtan and distribute with his own tiny lotus hands sandesh and rasgulla and varieties of sweetmeats to everyone who was chanting for his pleasure, to assure them and us that if you take to the path of bhakti and seek exclusively his pleasure, he will provide all your needs with his own loving hands. He was very sweet and enchanting until he went to school. And very quickly became such an exalted pundit. Because Navadvip at the time was the center and emporium of learning and culture for all the world. And no one anywhere was recognized as a real pundit unless he had a diploma from Navadvip. The deficiency was even that the greatest professors with their own academies, they taught everything except bhakti. And literary tournaments, scholastic debates, was like these sports. You know, they didn't play whatever, football, or they had their scholastic debates. And it was very egotistic. But they quickly realized that when little Nimai shows up, he had a general pattern. I mean, every instant was unique, but the general pattern was he would approach a pundit, a little child just started school. He would approach a pundit, "My dear pundit, I have a question." He would ask a question that no one could understand, much less answer. They would be dumbfounded. And he would answer the question himself. And they were more amazed. "We have never heard a question, what to speak of an answer like that. Who is this child? Is this Saraswati? Is this Brihaspati? Is this some form of the Lord who is descended to humble our false pride?" And he would just wander in his peripatetic meanderings throughout Navadvip. And whenever he saw a pundit, they would just disperse. Like the lion in the jungle is out, and all the other creatures would flee for their lives. He would ask a question, he would give the answer, and then he would refute his own explanation. And at that point, everyone knew, if you have any opinion other than his, you better keep it to yourself or hide. And even the devotees were not spared. He would run after the devotees. "Oh, Mukunda." Mukunda was running. He grabbed him by the hand. "I have a question for you. I'll defeat him today. What's your question?" "My question is, you study logic. Tell me something about it." So he began to explain word for word from the Shastra, the most intricate verses of the Nyaya. And then Lord Gauranga began to meticulously dissect each and every word. Or Gadadhar, he would run after Gadadhar. "Gadadhar, why are you running from me?" He would catch him by the hand. Gadadhar would think, "I'll defeat him." "You study rhetoric? Tell me something about it." Gadadhar recited the most exquisite poetry of all history and culture. And then Nimai began to dissect each and every word and said, "Go home and study your rhetoric and poetry better, because I will meet you again tomorrow, and don't be late." It was only Srivas Thakur, when Nimai approached him, had the courage to chastise him, because he was that senior Vaishnava who was very much responsible for the Lord's descent and whose compassion upon the world was very influential. And he started, but then Srivas interrupted him and said, "Nimai, you just study day and night, and you are so obsessed in your triumphs of learning. But you never talk about bhakti. Everything is useless without bhakti. When will you take the mountain? And Nehemiah, for the first time in his life, was submissive. And he told him that, I don't have a guru. What can I know of bhakti? Please bless me that I will finish shortly my triumphs of learning and take to the path of devotional service. Then he gave the prediction that when I become a guru, you will see that the demigods, Brahma and Shiva, will be coming to my door and seeking my benedictions. And then the Vaishnavas were very happy. When will that be? That was the day. I mean, he'd already met Ishwarapuri. He was very touched by his humility and his guru bhakti. But when Nehemiah went to Gaya, ostensibly for the purpose of Inda, but really to take Diksha, and he begged Ishwarapuri, please give me that mantra. Ishwarapuri said, listen, Nehemiah, since the first time I saw you, I knew who you are. There is no one who can attract my heart away from my beloved deity. I know that you are he. If you beg me for Diksha, I will grant that as a service to you. But you are my Lord, and I am your servant. And the night of receiving his Diksha mantra, because his students came with him, they could hear him crying out in a voice different than usual. The words of the daughter of Vrishabhanu, as she was crying to Krishna separation, where have you gone after stealing my heart? And right then and there in the middle of the night, with arms raised in the air, tears flowing from his eyes, crying out, oh Krishna, I'm coming. He proceeded for Vrindavan. Until a voice from the sky reminded him, it's not our position to tell you your mission. But it's not time for you to go to Vrindavan now. You must first inaugurate your Sankirtan pastimes. That is the purpose of your descent into this world. Go back to Navadvip. Fulfill that purpose. So then, fast forward, wonderful pastimes. The deliverance of Jagai Madai, the transformation of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, the renunciation of Raghunath Das Goswami, Raghunath Das at the time, the theophany of Jarikanda, wonderful pastimes, which reveal to the world. This is a most exceptional avatar, so exceptional that some people didn't try to even figure out the depth of truth regarding this avatar. Others saw that this is a very deep and complex matter. No need to sweat over it very seriously. Others, looking a little deeper, saw that even amongst avatars, even more than the avatari, Krishna himself, this Gauranga is most special. How could he deliver Jagai Mata and Rupinson and on down the list? But really, what is the need for such pastimes? Considering what Haridas Thakur discerned, that my Lord, Mahaprabhu asked him, how will these degraded living entities be delivered? Haridas, they already are. By your appearance in this world and your kirtan resounding, everyone is in the universe is already liberated. Even those who are inimical, who are hostile, who were offensive, who avoided him or purposely kept distant. They all attained the Vaikunthas, which are always very difficult to achieve. What to speak of those who served him, who surrendered, who assisted, or even appreciated? They became eligible to enter the confidential groves of Goloka Vrindavan, which is not attainable even in Vaikuntha or from Vaikuntha. My Lord, the universe is already liberated. Mahaprabhu was thinking, how does he understand all this? He said, your pastimes are like an ocean. I cannot even begin to fathom one drop. So if the whole universe is delivered, then maybe these individual pastimes are not really so important. Especially considering that all these pastimes include his nitya-siddhas. But there is a deeper matter, very confidential, behind the scenes, unfolding since then until now and for 9,500 years to come. A matter which is like a mystery, which can only be unraveled by those who are like honeybees hovering at the lotus feet of Lord Gauranga, and those who submissively hear from them can understand the matter to some extent. Lord Gauranga considered himself to be a gardener, distributing fruits of Goloka Vrindavan and planting seeds within the earth. The deliverance of Jagga and Madai, wonderful as it was, is one of those seeds, seeds of hope in this world of death, an indication of things yet to be. When millions of Malechas, degraded like Jagga and Madai, were joined together on the sacrificial altar of the holy name, and although very degraded in the past, would become purified and worshipable even by Brahma and Shiva, the indication of that future eventuality demonstrated in the deliverance of Jagga and Madai, or the renunciation of Raghunath to demonstrate how in the future millionaires attached to wives beautiful as angels would find it all useless and irresistibly attracted to the sweet mellows of Vrindavan, walk away he was a single heir to an inheritance of multi-millions. The transformation of Prakasananda and Savabhava Madhacharya, an indication of how great thinkers swollen with the egotism that naturally, normally accompanies academia would find it all to be totally refuse and throw themselves at the feet of the goddess of devotion, the indication being the liberation of Savabhava Madhacharya. Or the revelation in Jarikanda, when the forest and the fauna and flora were all chanting in kirtan, which transformed the hearts of the uncivilized people who were far away, who, wherever they went, made by their association pure devotees in every town and village in the region. Wonderful as it was more an indication of things yet to come, not during his manifest lila. But that was a seed of the future eventuality to unfold later, to sustain those of us living in the rest of the Kali Yuga. He left indications of many things yet to be fulfilled. And yet we may wonder why a mere 500 years after his appearance. The prophesied golden age is not most manifest as much as the degradation predicted for the far-off end of the Kali Yuga, which is all now manifesting prematurely. It might not be unreasonable to conclude that his mission, rather than being the first indications of a golden age, is actually more like headed for extinction. Kavi Karnapur has given us a little indication into the life and consciousness of Kali, who prevails over what is normally called Kali Yuga. And in the 10th canto and 11th canto, we have descriptions of Kali Yuga from beginning to end. Similar descriptions, very different conclusions. In the 10th canto, when Shukadeva Goswami describes to Maharaj Pariksit the degradation of Kali, he keeps saying, this is the worst of all ages. And hardly anyone will ever chant Hare Krishna. In the 11th canto, the same descriptions are given with a different conclusion. This is the best of all ages. And everyone will chant Hare Krishna. And the progeny of distant celestial planets and other ages, including Satyuga, will pray to take birth in this blessed Kali Yuga, not an ordinary Kali Yuga. Shukadeva Goswami is talking about the normal 999 out of 1,000 Kali Yugas. In the 11th canto, Karavajna Muni is explaining to King Mimi the exceptional Kali Yuga. And Lord Gauranga comes not as the Yuga avatar, who was a Gaura Narayan in every Kali Yuga, teaching the Yuga Dharma of chanting a holy name. But that holy name can only take you as far as Vaikuntha, from where the mercy of Lord Gauranga is unattainable. This is that special, rare, exceptional Kali Yuga. When the Lord himself, the son of Nanda, feels some attraction to this ineffable mood of Srimati Radharani. And what he distributes to this world is not Yuga Dharma. It contains and excels Yuga Dharma. It might be called Prema Dharma. Go look at a Prema Dharma. Kali, at the beginning of his age, saw that there is an effulgence coming from this cowherd boy whose complexion is like a sapphire, but is blinding the vision of everyone as if in the darkness some bright light shines in your eyes. Krishna's Leela extended 25 years into what would have normally been the beginning of Kali Yuga. Kali Yuga entered. As soon as Krishna departed this world, Kali Yuga began with vengeance. Because he knew that when Krishna comes in his Vrindavan future, he will be followed in 2500 years by another avatari who, Saraswati, who is especially gifted at succinctly articulating the essence in sutras, the direction to praying, not Vaikuntha praying, not Aishwarya praying, Goloka praying, the direction to praying, which previously no one had understood that was the effect of chanting the holy name. Eligibility for entering the sweet nectar groves of Vrindavan, which previously no one understood anyone could attain, and the luster of the talk most peak of spiritual perfection, Srimati Radharani, who no one ever really understood, all these things and so much more, Sri Ranga Mahaprabhu has distributed to the world with the sound of his holy name. The Buddha Nisarasana goes on to explain that that which could not be achieved by the faithful performance of the prescribed duties, or by meditation, or mystic yoga, or charity, or debate, or study of shastra, or tapasya, that which could not even be understood or experienced by many of Sri Govinda's personal servants, is given only by Govinda Mahaprabhu, because he is that exceptional ocean of mercy. So, when Kali saw the rising of the benediction moon and the darkness which should prevail in his age was being dispelled,
maybe it's too bright, so if you don't like it, I can try to...